Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MacWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 263. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
That's going pretty good. Yeah, so question is, how are you? Fresh back from Germany and another country. And you tired? I feel like I'd be jet lagged after coming back. But yesterday, you flew all day yesterday. So recording here on Sunday. So it's been the same old for me, but you had a pretty cool week. How are you?
Yeah, I'm actually good. Like, I'm good right now. I slept a lot last night. So I woke up 7 a.m. on Saturday, 7 a.m. local time in Germany, which is they're 6 hours ahead of the East Coast. So it would have been 1 a.m. here, and then flew all day. Two flights, 3-hour flight from Frankfurt to Lisbon, Portugal, and then about an hour and a half layover, another 7.5-hour flight from Portugal back to Boston. Had to go through customs when I got back, obviously, which was a mile-long line. Go get my car, the shuttle at the bus station, and then drive 2 hours back. So I got home around 11:30 p.m. Eastern time. I was dead tired, but slept until 10 a.m., so I think that just that really helped, sleeping like 10, 11 hours. So I'm good. Ready to talk some baseball here, some shortstop prospects. And we have a great guest with us to do. Former Canadian, current Arkansasian. I don't even know what. I'm sure he can correct me on that. That's probably not it. He's a Dynasty content creator for Prospects Live and the Dynasty Guru at Greg Hoogkamp, HOGKAMP on Twitter. Greg Hoogkamp joins us. Greg, how you doing, man?
Doing well, boys. Nice to be with you. I have to say that this is a pleasure to be with you guys. I think I've listened to every single episode you guys have recorded on this podcast. I don't know how many people can say that. So I'm very happy to be a part of it and honored to be asked to be on it. And I think it's
Arkansan. Okay. I was wondering Arkansan. That makes more sense than Arkansasian. That's just way too long of a name. But
I just remember Les Miles always, when he coached LSU, he'd always say Arkansas when LSU would play Arkansas. I don't know why. So that hit a chord. I thought of that. I don't know why.
Oh yeah, that is how it's Arkansas. Yeah, Arkansas.
Arkansian.
That's fine. I never thought of it that way, but that is how it's spelled, right? Because Arkansas. Yeah, Arkansas. Huh. I never heard him say that. I'm not a college football guy, so I never really heard that. But yeah, we are talking dynasty or shortstop prospects for dynasty today. We all got our top 30 ranks on the spreadsheet. We're gonna break them all down. Talk some intriguing names here. Before we do, usual housekeeping. Again, you can follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Hoogkamp, Chris at RotoClegg. I'm at EricRoss04. Please rate and review the show. We would definitely appreciate those. Check out all of our personal work. Obviously, you know where Chris and I can be found. And again, Greg's stuff's over at Prospects Live and the Dynasty Guru. All right, let's start off with our personal. We'll go a little deeper today. We've been doing top 25s on the other infield positions, but obviously shortstop. Top 25 wouldn't even get us out of the top 100 for the most part. So we're adding another five names. So we're going super deep past 25, but adding a few more names in here. So we'll do our top 30, break it down. We'll go our top 15 names each first, talk some players, and do 16 through 30. But Greg, why don't you kick us off with your top 15 shortstop prospects?
Sure. So number one is Jackson Holliday. Number two, Junior Caminero. Number three, Jordan Lawler. Number four, Adeel Amador. Number five, Noel V. Marte. Number six, Jackson Merrill. Number seven, Colson Montgomery. Number eight, Ronnie Mauricio. Number nine, Carson Williams. Number 10, Jet Williams. Number 11, Matt Shaw. Number 12, Sebastian Walcott. Number 13, Brooks Lee. 14, Mason Wynn. And 15, Marcelo Meyer.
Chris, what's your top 15?
I'm going to be the oddball, have Junior Caminero at one, followed by Jackson Holliday. Jordan Lawler, Jackson Merrill, and Matt Shaw round out the five for me. Six through 10 is Adeel Amador, Colson Montgomery, Colt Emerson, Brooks Lee, and Marcelo Meyer. And then 11 through 15 would be Carson Williams, Sebastian Walcott, Jet Williams, Leo DeVries, and Tommy Troy.
Man, could you imagine if you gave Junior Caminero's power to Jackson Holliday, like with all that Holliday brings? Obviously, Holliday has some power, like he has none, but just give Caminero's power to Holliday. That'd be phenomenal. I do have Holliday one and then Caminero two, Jordan Lawler three, Noel V. Marte four, Adeel Amador five, six through 10, Matt Shaw, Jet Williams, Jackson Merrill, Carson Williams, and Luis Angel Acuna. And 11 through 15, Marcelo Meyer, Colson Montgomery, Ronnie Mauricio, Sebastian Walcott, and Mason Wynn. And we've already talked Caminero on the third base episode, so we won't really get into him again here. But obviously, what better place to start than with Jackson Holliday, who I think if you polled like 1,000 people on Twitter, I think he'd have who's the number one prospect. I think the biggest percentage chunk would go to Jackson Holliday. You'd have some Caminero votes. You'd have some Langford votes, obviously. But I think Holliday would probably win that. So what are we thinking peak Holliday looks like? Obviously, still very young, just turned 20, but a month and a half ago in early December, but did get up all the way up to AAA at age 19 last year, 18 games there to end the season. Overall, in 125 games across four levels, which is just phenomenal to look at here as a 19-year-old. / 323, 442, 499, had 30 doubles, 9 triples, 12 home runs, 24 steals, 101 walks to 118 strikeouts. I don't think anybody thinks he's a finished product yet, even though he is close to major league ready and might even break camp. But Greg, let's fast forward a handful of years, let's say 5 years down the road. What do you think Jackson Holiday looks like as an offensive player.
I think he could be one of those 300, 400, 500 guys at peak, honestly. The only thing that's really missing, not missing, but it's not at the top, would be his power. He's still young and growing, and like he's 19 or turning 19 this year. That's the only thing that's really lacking. But I think once he gains the good weight and develops that power, he's going to be able to hit 20, 25 home runs at peak. So I think he's one of those guys. Obviously, he's going to steal some bases as well, 25 to 30, I think, at peak as well. My comp for him is Bo Bichette, but I think he, when all said and done, he'll be better than Bo. And I'm a Jays fan, so I know Bo very well.
Yeah, maybe Bo Bichette if he still ran, which is, we talked about that in the Dynasty episode, how Bo hasn't really run a lot the last couple of years after showing at least some speed element to his game early on in his career. Obviously, it's still early in his career, but yeah, Holiday, obviously high average, high OBP. Like, I think he's one of the few guys I can safely project as a 300 plus hitter, 400 plus OBP. I think the only question I really have is where does that power end up? He didn't hit any home runs off lefties in last year. He was still hitting well off lefties, so it's like a major red flag, but didn't really show a lot of power against lefties. So we'll see how that progresses this year and moving forward. And then, is he a 15 and 20 home run guy? Is he 25, like you said? I think that's the real X factor here. Is we know he can add some decent amount of speed, and we know he's one of the best pure hitters, maybe the best pure hitter in the minor leagues right now. So yeah, that power is really the X factor here. But Chris, what are your thoughts on what a peak Holiday might look like?
It's interesting. You never really know, but so young, he moved so quickly. I actually think that he doesn't really get the credit for the power that he deserves. He actually hit the ball pretty hard last year, had a 91 mile an hour average EV, which for his age and size, really, I thought was rather impressive. And honestly, the power, at least from the data standpoint, is as impressive as the contact skills. He only made contact 76% of the time at an 82% zone, which is fine. Like, those are good. But what Holiday's best at is zone awareness, pitch recognition, doesn't chase out of the zone often, low chase rate below 20%. So he's going to take his walks. I think 400 OBP is well within reason of what we're going to get out of Holiday long term. There's power. I'm actually not sure how much speed there's going to be in the profile. I think that's an interesting question of how many bases does he steal. And it could be like a Bo situation, honestly, where eventually he steals early on in his career and kind of tails off a bit. I could certainly see that as a possibility. I think I'm comfortable saying he's a double-digit steals source for at least the first few years of his career, maybe 10 to 12 to 15 range with 20 to 25 home run pop. Certainly he's going to play really well in an OBP league, but I think the contact skills also improve. We have to factor in that we're looking at a really young 19 years old that was pushed like he was to AAA by the end of the year. So that's wild. So yeah, I certainly think Holiday is deserving to be at the top, and he's going to have a really long, successful career, bloodlines, everything of that nature. But Greg, you said you have something to share about Holiday that you didn't get in. What you got?
So when I was looking into him, I found this stat, which is crazy. So he had 581 plate appearances last year. In 579, so all but two, he faced a pitcher that was older than him.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Not surprising.
Not surprising because he's so young, obviously, but I thought that was amazing.
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah. You think about it, the whole year facing advanced pitching, fresh out of high school, what he did was certainly tremendous.
Now I'm trying to think of those two plate appearances. Does it say like who the pitcher or two pitchers were that he faced that were younger than him?
No, that was on Baseball Reference, so it just had the two at-bats, but I'm guessing somebody right at the very beginning of the year, probably.
Yeah, probably, it was probably somebody when he was in – he started in low A, right? He was low A for the first just 14 games. And then he went 57 games in high A, 36 in double A. We had 18. He went through double A so damn quick, I didn't even get to see him. Because Bowie didn't come to Maine or New Hampshire during that time frame, if I recall correctly. So I didn't even get a chance to see him as he was there for so brief amount of time. But yeah, definitely probably – maybe the safest prospect. I don't think any prospect is 100% safe, but you know, he's probably as close as there is to it in the minor leagues today. Next guy on the list here, Jordan Lawler. But we all still have so I have him three. Oh, we all have him three. Look at that. Perfect. So we also have him as top three shortstop prospect. And it's funny because I think his value has taken a bit of a hit, and I think it's unfair because he only had 34 plate appearances. And yeah, he didn't set the league on fire like Evan Carter did down the stretch, but it was only 34 plate appearances. He went 4 for 34, struck out 11 times. So obviously not really that exciting, but this is a guy coming off a 16 homer, 39 steal year in 2022 when he hit 303, 401, 509 that year. And then in 2023, a little bit of a slow start, but really picked it up the last 3-4 months. He was in the minors overall, 278, 378, 496, 20 home runs and 36 steals. We'll see if he starts the year in the major leagues. Obviously, the addition of Eugenio Suarez kind of clouds things there. But I think long-term, Greg, personally, I think that Lauer is a phenomenal buy because that, like as I mentioned, the perceived value shouldn't have taken a dip. And I really think it did. But do you agree there that Jordan Lawler is a good dynasty buy right now?
Absolutely, he is. You nailed it with the perceived value. A lot of dynasty managers are, what have you done for me lately? And they see that 34 plate appearance audition and they say, oh, he can't do it. But he's got a track record. He's a phenomenal prospect. And I'm a hit tool first guy. So this is my type of player for sure. He may, like you mentioned, with the way the roster is constructed right now, he may not start with the club, but I don't think it'll be very long before he's up because he's a much better player than Perdomo is. Perdomo's a great shortstop, but and he was an all-star last year. I don't want to downplay too much, but Lawler's going to be one of the franchise players for the Diamondbacks going forward. So it won't be long as he's producing in AAA.
Yeah, I've always said that one of the best times to buy a guy in dynasty, especially like a young player or a prospect that has just debuted and struggled a little bit. Again, it was 34 plate appearances. People were making it seem like, oh, he's not as good as we thought. It was such a small sample size. It's way too early to make that determination. But Chris, what are your thoughts here on Lawler?
He made significant strides this year. He's always actually, to me, been a contact question mark. Like his contact rates have been pretty bad for a lot of his career. And this year, he certainly made a big leap. First 2 months of the season, 68% contact, hitting 165 with a sub 300 OBP. After that, the rest of the season, the contact rate jumped to 78%, so a 10 percentage point jump. And that followed with a slash line of 325, 416, 565. The power sits around league average, like from an exit velocity standpoint. So he's not going to be a massive power source, I don't think. But we are looking at elite power or elite speed, excuse me. He's going to steal bases. He's stolen 76 in his minor league career, been called just 11 times. So you're certainly getting a player who has a good feel for contact. He's going to get on base. I think there's more juice than most want to acknowledge. I think he's a 20 home run bat, and I think he could steal 30 bases. So obviously that's extremely valuable. The what have you done for me recently thing is certainly a real thing. And if people don't come up and light the world on fire in their debut, suddenly everybody's like, oh, they're just not as good as we thought. We're talking about a Jordan Lawler who was 20 for half of the season last year. He turned 21 just after the All-Star break. So a young 21-year-old came up to the majors and he had 34 plate appearances. Like who even cares about 34 plate appearances? That's not enough a sample to make any kind of judgment. So I think that if someone in your league that rosters Lawler is maybe concerned about that, which is highly possible that you can get him a little bit discounted, I would certainly be looking to trade for Lawler if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why the value has dipped as much as it has, or at least the perceived value has. Going back to him versus Evan Carter, I think if you looked at when they both debuted, I think I'd say 80% of prospect rankings probably had Lawler ahead. It was close for the most part. They'd be within a handful of spots, but I do think the consensus would have Lawler ahead. And now you look at dynasty ranks after the last month of the season and how each of these guys fared in the major leagues, and I don't think you'd see Lawler even close to Carter. It'd probably be 40, 50 spots in overall dynasty rankings. And that's, I'm not saying Carter's a sell or anything like that, but yeah, I think Lawler is a phenomenal buy right now. Moving over to Adiel Amador here, who I think is maybe one of the more underrated kind of top prospects in all of baseball. Yeah, he's considered top 100 everywhere and probably top 50 everywhere at this point. But I still think he's a bit underrated. He missed a bit of time last year, only played 69 games. One of the better hit tool guys in the minor leagues. I believe in Baseball America's, all of their team top 30s that they just updated for 2024, they only gave two players a 70 grade hit tool, and that was Jackson Holiday and Adiel Amador. You look at those 69 games, 287, 380, 495, 15 doubles, 12 home runs, 15 steals, more walks than strikeouts, 39 to 37. But I think the question here, Greg, do we think that Amador has enough power speed to be like a big impact fantasy shortstop? Because I think he's going to have value of some sort because how advanced he is, and he's got Coors Field. But do you think he has enough power and speed to be like that big time impact guy to a guy that we might be looking at as maybe a starting caliber fantasy shortstop down the road?
I will say yes, but I'll say with a couple of caveats. I think the speed for sure plays. He definitely has shown that. I don't think he's going to hit a ton of home runs, but Coors will help. So yep. Coors is such a big outfield. He may not have home runs, but he's going to gain slugging by his doubles and his triples and things like that. And the other thing too is I think he's going to switch over to second base eventually and work with Tovar as a double play combination. And so that's two things that would hesitate me a little bit, but I think he will be a starting caliber infielder for fantasy.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I think he does shift over to second base. But Chris, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, the hit tool is, I think, the best in the minor leagues. Thinking Luis Arraez-esque type hit tool. The contact skills were just otherworldly. 89% overall, 94% in zone. That's just absolutely nuts. And the power is not a zero either. He actually hits the ball decently hard, but he pounds it on the ground is half the problem. He's got to lift the ball more. So I really like the prospect. I think that he's just the questions of what kind of home run stolen base output do we get for like fantasy purposes? And I think that he's probably like a 15 home run bat, maybe a little bit more. Coors Field, like I said, it's actually not a great home run park, but he could spray doubles and triples in those alleys all day long. And I think he's probably like a 20 stolen base guy early in his career. Maybe he's like a 15-15 guy, settles in it, but the hit tool is really good. He's going to have to lift the ball more. We're just looking at a ton of ground balls, 55% this past season. So if you lift it, the results are going to come, but still the results have been really good with Adiel Amador. And so I'm in belief that Coors Field only helps him. Like it's going to boost the BABIP to an extreme. Like he may have seasons where he hits like 320, and that's crazy to say for a prospect, but what other players make 90% overall contact and 94% in zone? Like those are only 300 hitters that do. So yep. Yeah, we're going to see what Amador can do in double A. I think that'll be his biggest test yet. Hartford is a tougher place to hit. Most of all the Colorado affiliates are pretty hitter friendly, but Hartford's a big test. So double A this year, we'll be telling more of who Amador is. And I think that's going to be something to watch closely early in the season with him. It's okay, what's he going to produce? And I think double A will be a lot more telling for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm hoping I get a lot of live looks at him while he's at double A, because who knows how long he's there. He hasn't really stayed too long at any level. He's only in high A for 54 games. Don't know how long he'll be there, but I like Amador a lot. Like I said, I think he's super undervalued. Like you mentioned, the BABIP boost, I think it's going to help a lot of things. Coors helps a lot of things. It's give him a boost in the average. He may be in a neutral park. Maybe he's like a 15 homer guy. But with Coors, that could be 20. And so I think 320-20 is definitely in play. And I don't know why people keep sleeping on him. Maybe it's because he hasn't really had that huge statistical season. He's been very good and hit, you know, 292 for his career with a 401 OBP and 20 more walks than strikeouts in 231 games. This guy is such a high floor and gets Colorado for half his games. I think that's why I have him as a top 15 overall prospect, and I haven't seen many others that have him that high in overall. But now we go over to a shortstop that's pretty different in terms of profile from Adiel Amador, a guy that has more power and speed, but some hit tool questions, a guy that Chris and I got to see and talk to a bit out in the Arizona Fall League, and that's Carson Williams from the Tampa Bay Rays. In 115 games last year, most of that was with high A. Then he got a brief cup of coffee with both double A Montgomery and triple A Durham. Overall, 23 home runs, 20 steals with a 258, 356, 497 slash line. But again, swing and miss issues were there because in 503 plate appearances, struck out 31.5% of the time. Greg, is this a guy? I know you hinted that you like those hit tool guys. And obviously, there are some questions here with Williams' hit tool. So Where are you at on him now? Is he a target of yours, or are you shying away a little bit?
At this point, I'm probably shying away a little bit. I wish his hit tool was a little bit better, because everything else is just so intriguing. Like, his chase rate is even good. Like, it's only, I had it at 24%, but 60% contact rates are not going to fly. Pitchers are just going to exploit that, and he's not going to get to his power because he's not going to be able to make contact with the ball. He's a great athlete, so there's hopefulness that he can make adjustments and changes, but he's got to make some adjustments or else he's not going to be as successful as he is capable of.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, he's, I don't know, the tools for days is what I would say when you think of Carson Williams. He's a gold glove shortstop with a really good arm, hits the ball crazy hard. He had a 107 90th percentile last year, so that's plus or better power. And while the home runs don't show it, he sprays line drives to all parts of the field and does it well. He did hit 23 this year, which was encouraging, but there's a lot of line drives, hits the ball with authority. He's got speed, stolen 28 and 20 bases over the last two seasons, so that's certainly encouraging. But the contact rate, like Greg mentioned, is 68%, was not great. So that's a concern. He does chase a lot of sliders out of the zone. He struggles with spin and picking up on spin. I think you have to make a conscious effort to really work on that. And I think he was doing that in the Arizona Fall League. And he even mentioned it, like, he didn't care about the results he was getting, so he was there to work on some things. So I think that Williams still has the potential. I'm talking still a 20-year-old, 21, but at the end of the day, like, if you can't make contact, the results aren't going to fly. So even if he can just get to the 71% overall contact range, it's just a small increase, then we're looking at a totally different player. So I want to bet on him. I feel like his value went way up. Like, I was way in on him. Like, when I saw him in May this year, I was super in. And just skills, tools, and I think I pushed him like top 20. And then I think he got more valuable, and then people realized there were some swing and miss issues, and he's tanked a little bit. So it may be a decent time to buy. I still think he's a top 50 prospect, but there's certainly room for growth if the contact skills do improve.
Yeah, and if they do, like, he's a – I think he could be one of the best all-around shortstops in the game. Is when you factor in the defense that he brings to the table, very good defender. A guy that's probably going to, if he hits enough, will probably be that long-term shortstop for Tampa Bay. And I think that's why I'm willing to bet on him. There are obviously he needs to clean up swing and miss, make more, a little more contact. But I think that defense gives him a longer leash than it would most other players that are maybe just like average defenders there. They realize like how good of an all-around player. Like, he's got four tools right now. Really needs that fifth tool, that hit tool to come through. And he could be just like an all-star caliber shortstop, and he seems like a really smart guy, so I'm willing to bet on him. That's why I still have him as a top 50 guy right now, because almost all the ingredients are there. We'll see if he can put that last one together, but I do think he's a good buy right now. So I think, again, longer leash will give him some time to work through that, and hopefully if he can put that together, just hit like 250 at the major league level, could be a pretty fun player. This next guy here is maybe one of the more polarizing shortstop prospects in the game right now. That's Sebastian Walcott from the Texas Rangers. Still only 17 years old. He'll be 18 closer to the start of the season in the middle of March. You know, last year came out guns a-blazing to kind of start the season at the complex level, but then really fell flat on his face. So it was really a tale of two seasons for him. But one thing that was there throughout was a lot of swing and miss, but big power, some speed. Chris, I'll go over to you first on this one. Where are you at on Walcott right now? Because you saw him skyrocket up rankings. You know, we had some midseason mock drafts. He got taken super high in that. And then right after that's when all the struggles came in. So where are you at on Walcott after what we saw from him in 2023?
I'm pretty in, actually. I was supposed to see him live, but he went to the dev list when Hickory came down for the playoffs, which sucked. So I was going to see him. He was added to high A, and the day before, gone. But anyway, I think that there were some struggles, like once people picked up on who he was. But again, we're talking about a 17-year-old that was at the complex. Like, you know, he actually moved around a lot. He went from the DSL out to Arizona to the complex, where he just put up some illustrious exit velocities. And the contact skills weren't all that bad. I actually do think there's some bad perceptions out there about Walcott just being a clown, doesn't care about his teammates, got suspended, which isn't actually true. I keep hearing people talk about this, how he was suspended when he wasn't. There was that day when the big trade went down. Was it the Scherzer trade or the Verlander trade? It would have been, I don't even remember. It was Scherzer. When that trade went down, there was speculation because Walcott was pulled from that game. And there was speculation that he was being traded. And then the reports came out that he was suspended for attitude issues. That actually wasn't true. There were some other things going on. I was told maybe some family situations. His entire family was actually at the complex for a couple of weeks. And that's not very common for a Dominican player. So I don't know the full story, but I do know that he actually wasn't suspended. So I think that's at least worth mentioning because at the end of the day, I think that he's a teenager. He was a superstar teenager at that. Like, he was doing some incredible things. And I think it maybe caused him to get a bit of a big head, but I still think there's a lot of potential here. The contact was fine. He was like 70% overall, 80% in zone. Like, it's respectable for his age. I think he put up some pretty gaudy exit velocities. I think he reached up to 110, maybe higher. I heard rumors of like 114. I don't know if that's true. I don't have those numbers, but still, I think there's a player that could be a 30 home run, 20 stolen base type where the hit tool lands, still to be determined. But this is a young kid. He won't turn 18 until mid-March, so he'll begin the season as a young 18-year-old, probably in single A, I'd have to guess. But the talent's there. There's a recipe for a superstar player here. If all clicks, Walcott's got a frame you can dream on. But at the end of the day, like, we have to figure out like where the hit tool's going to land. And for that, I don't know yet.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Like, I still have him. He's number 51 overall for me right now. I think I got him as high as like the 30s when he was peak value, not peak value, but like when his value jumped earlier in 2023. And that kind of, you know, whittled him back a bit in my rankings, but still a top 50 caliber guy. Obviously, so I could be top 10 by end of the year. Like you mentioned, like, the super high upside. You mentioned the frame. You can just drool about the frame. So projectable. Imagine what he looks like when he fills out. Maybe he has to move off the position. That's definitely possible. We'll see. But Greg, what are your thoughts on the polarizing Sebastian Walcott?
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. He's one of those high variance guys. When you have a 6'4", 17-year-old with long levers, it makes your strike zone hard to defend. Obviously, you have to adjust and grow into your body, and that takes time. And obviously, he struggled when he was promoted, which is going to happen to a lot of guys, but he's an athlete. He's got huge tools. And Chris, you said 30-20. That's what I had written down on my sheet, 30-20. I think that's an upside for him. He may not have the highest batting average or OBPs, but the power is just unbelievable. But the downside of it is he doesn't make the major leagues. So
yeah,
he's one of those guys that could be a superstar or could not arrive at all.
Yep, very well said. All right, let's move on to the last guy in this section of the show from my Boston Red Sox, Mr. Marcelo Mayer, number 4 overall pick back in 2021. But you know, he's been solid in the major leagues, but 2023 was a bit of a down year for him. We still had 13 home runs and 9 steals in 78 games last year. Nearly split between high A Greenville and double A Portland. Slash line dipped a decent amount from 2022, though. 2022 was 280, 399, 489. 2023 down to a 236, 306, 433 slash line. Yeah, there's some that say he's a better real life shortstop than a fantasy one. So I can see he's a good defender. But Greg, what are your thoughts on Mayer? Are you super in on him? And what do you think here?
You guys will be able to answer this better because I think you both saw him live this summer and I didn't, but I think he can definitely get back into the top echelon of fantasy shortstops prospect wise. I think the injury that kind of shelved him at the end of the year hampered him for longer than people realize, just because his numbers like dipped earlier. So I think that was maybe hidden a little bit, but yeah, he's a solid all around shortstop. And you mentioned him being maybe a better real shortstop. He could be one of those guys. He doesn't have any standout tools, but I think he's just a good all-around player, and I think with health, he'll rise back to that again.
Yeah, and I think it speaks volumes too that the Red Sox have basically said like that they're looking to trade for a starter, but like he's off the table. They're not trading him, Anthony, or Kyle Tia, which I totally understand. But the organization is still incredibly high on Marcelo Mayer. And yeah, he was dealing with a bit of an injury. He was never really 100% healthy for a large chunk of that season. And he still was on, like, you double his games played to 156. That's 26 home runs, 18 steals. Still having a decent year, even though the average wasn't there. The OPP wasn't there. But again, Williams, he's a good defender. Just give him a bit of a longer leash here. And again, the Red Sox org is still very enamored with Marcelo Mayer, and he is the shortstop of the future here in Boston. And that speaks volumes, I think. Yeah, I'm definitely, maybe he's not going to be a stud fantasy guy, but I think he could still be a above average or a good fantasy shortstop. Maybe a guy that's back end starting caliber guy, maybe like a high end corner, middle infield type, excuse me. I definitely think it's a good time to buy Mayer right now because the perceived value, I think, is taken. More of a dip than it probably should. Obviously, Chris, you saw him a ton as well. We both saw him a handful of times over the course of the 2023 season. Excuse me. What are your thoughts on Mayer right now in Dynasty Leagues?
I've never been overly impressed with the bat. I've been very verbal about that since he came up in 2022. He just rolled over a lot of pitches. He didn't do a lot with the bat that wowed me. A lot of his home run power came to the extreme pool side, like in the shortest part of the parks. He plays an excellent shortstop. He's very smooth. And I will say, I don't think he's like this impressive athlete by any means, but he does just glide as he moves in the field. He's got a good arm. Yep. He's very quick. But the bat, it's okay. We did see some power jumps this year. The ninth percentile jumped to 105, so that's above average power. He maxed out at 112. There also, the shoulder injury certainly lingered for a while. He got hurt during a slide on May the 7th, and the numbers were drastic. 337, 414, 582 before, and 192, 53, 366 after. So that's a massive drop. So I think it was clear that he played injured for a good chunk of the time, especially while he was in Portland. And that's certainly a big jump to go to AA while you're dealing with a shoulder injury. And we'll see. He said he's fully healthy this offseason. I don't think he's going to be much of a threat on the base pass. But I think that the draft comps of Corey Seager just aren't it. He's not going to get to that power. He's not going to have that kind of hit tool. Not to say he can't be a solid player, but I think he's more of a top 50 prospect versus a top 10 prospect for at least fantasy. More valuable in real life because of the glove, the position, etc. But I'm a little more hesitant because I think he's probably closer to a 20 to 25 home run bat at peak that steals five bases versus a 30-10 guy. So I think I'm curious to see where the power does land. But right now, I'm just not fully in the buyback camp, even though I do think that he has a chance to bounce back this year.
Yeah, you're pretty much right where I was going to say with the long-term stats. I was thinking 20-plus home runs, 5 to 10 steals, maybe in the vicinity of a 270 hitter. I think that's where he's at, yeah. Which is still obviously a very good player, and yeah. That's absolutely fantasy valuable. Yeah, I think we're all in agreement here. I don't think he's going to be a stud, but still could be a pretty solid player for fantasy. All right, let's move on to our next set of rankings. Here we go, 16 through 30. Greg, who you got?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
16, Aurelvis Martinez. 17, Colt Emerson. 18, Roderick Arias. 19, Ricardo Cabrera. 20, Joey Ortiz. 21, Cole Young. 22, Joendry Vargas. 23, Thomas Ajayi. Number 24, Kiner Delgado. 25, Tommy Troy. 26, Luis Angel Acuna. 27, newest San Diego Padre, Leo DeVries. 28, Arjun Namala. 29, Walker Martin. And 30, Ty Pete.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, let's start off with Roderick Arias at 16, followed by Joendry Vargas, Mason Wynn, Cole Young, and Aurelvis Martinez in the 20 spot. And then 21 through 25 is Luis Angel Acuna, Felton Celston, Juan Brito, Thomas Jacy, Brayan Rocchio, Jefferson Rojas at 26, Arjun Namal at 27, Ricardo Cabrera 28, Walker Martin at 29, and wrapping up at 30 with Marco Luciano.
All right, I got Leo DeVries 16, Brooks Lee 17, Cole Emerson 18, Ricardo Cabrera 19, and Cole Young rounding up my top 20. 21 through 25, Joandre Vargas, Roderick Arias, Arjun Namala, Tommy Troy, Joey Ortiz, and 26 through 30, Ryan Bliss, Edwin Arroyo, Michael Arroyo, Braden Taylor, and I also have Marco Luciano at 30. What do you see on that one? All right, but start off with one of the other big, projectable, kind of fun, low minor shortstops. That's Joandre Vargas with the Los Angeles Dodgers. A guy that spent 48 games with their DSL affiliate last season, slash 328, 423, 529, nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 30 to 31, and had 20 extra base hits, 7 home runs in those 48 games, and also stole 19 bags. Greg, what do you think on Joandre Vargas? Like, you think he's a guy that, we fast forward a year to next offseason, like, how high do you think he rises up rankings this year?
I think he's kind of like Walcott, to be honest. He's the same frame size, a lot of the same tools. He just burst onto the scene as a young guy. Power-speed combination. Again, it'll be the hit tool that kind of decides whether he's going to rise up the ranks, but he definitely has the possibility to do that. He's in a great organization to be developed that way. I don't know how the Dodgers keep finding these guys, but it's unbelievable. Yeah, absolutely. He has potential. But it's going to take time. He's going to have to grow a little bit. He's listed at 175. We don't know for sure what he is right now. But, yeah, there's lots of good things to look at there for sure.
Yeah, he's almost like you can – I still prefer Walcott a little bit. But I think the perceived value gap between these two is bigger than it actually should be. I don't think there's a big gap. Like, overall, long term, I think these guys could be pretty close. But you can get Vargas for a much – cheaper price tag right now. So I don't think his perceived value hasn't blown up like Walcott's did during 2023. So yeah, I like Vargas a lot. Like you said, a lot of similar tools there. Big time power speed blend potentially. Obviously, as with Walcott and really every player this age, we'll see where the hit tool winds up. That's always the X factor. But yeah, potential to be a real stud. I think there's a pretty good chance he's like a top 25 or better fantasy prospect this time next year. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Vargas here?
I'm way in here. I think that he could be a top 10 prospect this time next year. He just does a lot of things well. And I'm not banking on the hit tool being like otherworldly by any means. But he did post really good slash line last year of 328, 423, 529. Solid contact numbers. The frame is just a projectable athlete, as good as they come. He's just this kind of mold that you want to bet on the Dodgers developing, as they always do. He showed solid speed, stole 19 last year, pretty good instincts on the base path, good plate discipline skills, walked 30 times, struck out 31, really good pitch recognition there, 57 hits in 48 games, 20 of those being extra base hits. He's got power. I think he's going to be a 25 home run bat. I think he's going to be a sneaky source of speed. And while I think that there's probably a chance that Walcott's ceiling might be a little higher, I think Vargas' profile is a little bit safer because I think he's got a better hit tool and pitch recognition. We'll see. This is the type of profile that does thrive in a DSL environment. We'll see what it looks like as he moves up to stateside ball next year. He may end up skipping the complex. We've seen the Dodgers do that in the past. They did that with Josue De Paula this year. I'd love to see Vargas in single A Rancho Cucamonga to start the year. I have no clue if that actually happens. We'll see. But yeah, Vargas is a profile that 100% want to invest in.
That might be my favorite minor league team name to say, the Rancho Cucamonga. Yep. It's just such a fun word, Cucamonga. All right.
100%.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's a ton of breakout potential here, showing a decent approach. You know, obviously the power's there, projectability. It definitely absolutely could be. I think top 10 is definitely within the realm of possibilities at this time next year. Moving on to a guy that's very different from Joandre Vargas, and a guy we talked about in previous episodes, or I think we did in one of our previous episodes. I don't forget if it was a second base or third base, but a guy that's also played some shortstop as well. Maybe he's a super utility guy, so we thought we'd include him here, get Greg's thoughts on him. That's Thomas Ajayi. of the formerly of Texas, now with the St. Louis Cardinals organization, going over in the midseason trade there, and overall had a very good year in between Double A, mostly in Double A, a little bit Triple A into the season. 306, 374, 530 slash line, 34 doubles, 26 home runs, 12 steals, and even scored over 100 runs and 111 as well. I know those don't really matter, but just really an all-around big season from him in the minor leagues. A guy that's still only 21 years old. He'll be 22 really at the beginning of the season. So what are your thoughts, Greg, on Thomas Ajayi? Obviously, different from these a lot of these other guys we talked about. Does he have any of those big tools that you look for? No loud tools in the profile, but I think I mentioned this in that previous episode where maybe he's just more of a sum of all the parts guy that kind of always outperforms the underlying data. But what are your thoughts here on Ajayi?
Yeah, he's a guy I've actually seen a couple times this past summer as he came through. Both of the Double A teams that he played for last year come through Little Rock, and he's a guy that plays all over the diamond. He does a lot of things really well. Again, he doesn't have the standout tools, and like looking at his BABIPs, they're crazy: 350, 370, 410, 380, 375. Like, how is that sustainable for a guy that doesn't have the high end exit velocities, or he's not a burner either by any means? So my answer to that is I don't think he's going to sustain this. He's still going to be a good player, I think. I kind of comp him to a guy like Spencer Steer, who plays all around, has good, decent power, decent speed. He might be a 2010 guy at peak, but I don't think he's going to be any much more than that just based on his underlying numbers. They can't keep up.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fair. Chris, what are your thoughts here? And where do you think, where does he fit in with St. Louis? Like, he has never played outfield in his minor league career. Only played second base, third base, shortstop, even a couple games at first base a couple years ago. But obviously, the infield in St. Louis is pretty much locked down right now, assuming Mason Wynn works out. So do you think there's a future for him in St. Louis, or maybe he's on the move again this year?
See, it's an interesting case with that infield, at least, because like you mentioned, Mason Wynn's probably the shortstop of the future. They've got the corner spots locked down for some time with Goldschmidt and with Arenado. Second base is the only natural spot. Nolan Gorman occupies that. I think that Gorman probably is a more natural fit at DH. And I think Sajacy's honestly locked down to second base as a MLB player. I haven't, you know, seen other than video of his gloves. I'd be curious to hear Greg's perspective of that, because he did see Sajacy live. Like, what did the glove look like to you? And does he move well enough to play on that left side of the infield? Or is he more tied to second base, which is what my gut instinct tells me?
Yeah, he makes the routine plays just fine. I never saw him make a spectacular play, so I can't speak to that, but he'd be fine on second. I think he'd be serviceable, better than Gorman for sure.
Yeah, not hard there for sure. Yeah, I'm interested to see. I've been vocal about Sajacy being a sell. All the underlying data is fine. I think he's just like fives across the board. I don't think he has much speed, so I think it's like a average hit, average power. So we'll see how it shakes out, but it'd be crazy if they flipped him again. If they get the right offer, I guess they could, but I think second base is his future home. Don't see outfield in the cards for him.
Yeah, probably not. So he's never even played outfield, not even one single inning in his minor league careers. Yeah, we'll see on that one, but yeah, I like the player overall. Again, I think he's more of a sum of all the parts type of guy, but I think he could be a pretty solid all-around player. We'll just see where he fits in. I do think second base is the probably more likely home for him there. We shall see. Moving over to Luis Angel Acuña here, who seems to not get the love that I think he should. Like, it's funny that he doesn't, just because he's Ronald's brother, and everyone usually the names value there. Usually you think would give him a boost. Usually it does in most situations, but I think his value is still pretty fair in dynasty leagues and hasn't really gone up to where I think it should. I think I've always been a little bit higher on him than most. But he's coming off a pretty solid year this past year in AA. Spent the entire year there, two-thirds of it in the Texas org. Then he went over to the Mets via trade midseason. Overall slash 294, 359, 410, 9 home runs, 57 steals, 52 walks to 106 Ks. Greg, want to get your thoughts on Acuña here. I like Acuña a lot. I think he has even sneaky pull side pop, maybe put him in the maybe 15 home run at peak range. Obviously big speed. What are your thoughts on Acuña here?
He's another guy I saw a couple times this past summer with when Frisco came through. I don't get the negative buzz. I think he's a solid player. He's just obviously under his brother's shadow, which is inevitable. But 57 steals stands out to me. I think that's amazing. That's a game-breaking speed there. But he's small, and he's filled out already, so he's not gonna hit any more home runs than maybe 10 tops, I would say. But he's a good hitter. He sprays the ball around the field, and getting on base and stealing bases is valuable in fantasy. So I think he may move to second as well. He was blocked in Texas. He's blocked with Lindor in New York. So I think maybe he becomes a second baseman, but he'd be a valuable fantasy player for sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably his home is going to be at second base. And he's a good defender. There's plus or better speed, a little bit of pop. He's definitely not a zero there. And I think the contact skills are fine. I think they're around average, 260-ish type of hitter. I think maybe a little bit higher given the speed. He'll probably beat out some of those and get some infield singles, those types of gut plays. But yeah, I think he's undervalued right now just because he doesn't have that big power. But he can impact the game in a lot of other ways, especially with that speed. So yeah, I still have him as a top 50 guy. See, where do I have him in my overall? Overall, I have him 41 right now. And I've always been in that 40 range, give or take. I think I got him up into the back end of the top 30 at one point. But I think he's still pretty undervalued for sure. Chris, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I've actually seen a lot of hate for him on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, where he's a massive dynasty sell. I don't quite understand why. Maybe people are looking at a 30-game sample after being traded to New York. But again, new game, it's like completely different environment to get traded to. Completely different org. Players are pressing, trying to make these impressions on the new team. So I don't put much stock into that. He made major strides, I thought, in contact. 76% contact rate this year overall was pretty solid. The ground ball rates improved significantly. Last year in high A, he was like 59% ground ball, and he was sub 50% at both stops this year, which is more than ideal. He stole 57 bases. The speed is really elite. His glove is actually spectacular. 2 years ago in the AFL, I thought he was one of the most impressive like shortstops out there. He made some plays I was just highly impressed with. Very good athlete. You mentioned the power. Like, his BPs were really good. There's raw power in the bat for sure. Hasn't as much turned it into game power. Got to lift it more often. But plays well in an OBP league. Has good contact skills and average. Going to steal bases. Like, even if the power's below average, I think this is a fantasy asset that's worth investing in. So if the narrative online is that he's a sell, then buy. Like, I would 100% recommend that. I'm certainly in on Luis Angel Acuña. Maybe he's blocked. Maybe Lindor moves. I could see Lindor moving off shortstop because I really do believe that Acuña is that good at short. Now, they have a lot of options, a lot of shortstops in the system, but I'll be curious to see how that all shakes out. He's got the talent for sure, and if he moves to second and Lindor's at short, then that's going to be a really fun middle infield combo.
How many years does Lindor have left on his contract?
A lot. He was like a 10 or 12 year sign, right?
Yeah, here I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, it definitely was a big. I'm gonna say he's at least not another. Yeah, oh yeah, he's there through 2031. Yeah, he's there for a bit. Yeah, something's gotta give. Either Lindor has to move off. Is that the guy? Acuña, maybe he's ready. Maybe later this year. I think he could be a late 2024 debut. Obviously, Mauricio's hurt, but he'll factor into the long term picture. Maybe he moves over to third. They got Brett Beatty there, who I still believe in. So there's going to be a lot of moving parts there. I want to see how that all shakes out in New York. And maybe they trade Acuña or Beatty or Mauricio. Who knows? So we'll see how that works, shakes out over the next year or two. But one more player here to talk about before we get out of here. And that's Jefferson Rojas from the Chicago Cubs. The big name, breakout name in this system. You know, 2 years ago, everyone was on Christian Hernandez. That didn't work out too well. And now Jefferson Rojas is that hot name. After a pretty solid year, like, the numbers don't blow you away, but 266, 342, 400 slash line, 14 doubles, 7 home runs, and 13 steals in 71 games overall. 70 of those were for low A Myrtle Beach in the Carolina League there. So, Greg, where are you at on a guy like Jefferson Rojas? Like, are you believing in what we saw in 2023, and do you think he can continue to rise up rankings in 2024?
Yeah, I think he definitely can rise up rankings for sure. When you have an 18-year-old playing full season ball, that tells you something. They obviously believe in him, so they're putting him there. And then to put up a sub 20 K rate is excellent as well. So we haven't seen all the tools yet. It'll be interesting to see how this season plays out, but he's definitely a guy that could rise for sure. He wasn't on my top 30 list, but by this time next year, he definitely will be way up.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got that breakout appeal. So I think people are catching on to him now. But yeah, I think if he puts up, he probably goes to high A next year, and he really takes a step forward offensively, this could be a guy that rises the rankings a ton to be like maybe even a top 50 guy. Chris, I know you've been high on him for a bit now, and I think you even had a tweet, something along the lines of he is what Cubs fans hoped Hernandez was going to be or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
You said something along those lines. I remember you tweeting that out. So where do you see him next year? You think he could be top 50, maybe only top 100? Where are you at?
Yeah, the contact skills are really good here, and he's still growing. When he signed in January 2022, he was 5'8". His list right now is 5'10", 150, but he's actually, somebody in the Cubs org gave me his actuals. He's 5'11", 190. So he's grown 3 inches and added 40 pounds, and it's muscle. Like, I saw him when Myrtle Beach was in Columbia several times this year, and he's rather impressive. It's important to note that home park, though, for Myrtle Beach is probably the worst hitter's park in the minors. So it affects stats. Like, if you look at the basic stat line, the numbers don't jump off the page at all. He had 7 home runs at .268, .404 slug. Not really great, but he did have a 126 WRC plus, and that's rather impressive for an 18-year-old in full season ball who skipped the complex completely. We'll say that. He played one game at the complex this year before getting shipped off. I think the talent's here. The contact skills are really good. It's a really good swing, just smooth, exceptional athlete. At 77% contact rate as an 18-year-old in full season ball, I'll take that all day long. I truly believe that the power projection will be above average with time. I think he can get to 20 home runs at least, just with the way he's grown and how he's really added mass to his frame. The swing is certainly geared for some loft too. I like that. And he's a good athlete, can steal you some bases. Important to note that those numbers this year were just over 307 plate appearances because he didn't begin the season in Myrtle Beach. He was originally slated to go to the complex. And when the complex ball started at the beginning of June, they're like, hey, you're too good. Shipped him off to single A. So he played a little over half the season in single A ball. So if you extrapolate those numbers out, you were looking at 14 homers and 26 stolen bases. K rate below 20%. As Greg mentioned, 77% contact. Yeah, I think Rojas is certainly a player to invest in.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to wrap up the show here. Greg, thanks again for joining us. It was a real pleasure having you on, and I'll give you the floor here to close out the show, let everyone know what you got going on and where you can be found.
Sure. With Prospects Live, I'm mostly in the Patreon, so you have to be a member to get my stuff, but I'm doing a Dynasty series, much like you guys are doing here, and this was immensely helpful to go through these prospects with you guys. I definitely want to give a shout out to the Dynasty crew, Eddie, Drew, Matt, and Jordan. Great group of guys to work with. And then I also want to give a shout out to the Dynasty Guru boys. They have a great Discord led by Taylor Case. And he's the one that kind of got me into the industry. So I owe him everything. So, yeah. So thanks for having me on, guys. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was great having you on. This is a really fun position to talk about. And this is always, as Chris and I mentioned, a really good exercise. You look at other people's rankings and talk it out and see, maybe you think about a change you want to make to your own rankings throughout the show. I think it's a really helpful exercise, and we hope it helps everyone listening. But that will wrap us up. For Chris and Greg, I'm Eric, of course, and we'll see you next time. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.